You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
We had the most meme deck in the world.
I will do what I call the idiot check.
I know I sounded like the grumpy old man sitting on the front porch.
Continue.
Semi-nostalgic, semi-corset.
The trick I do on my students sometimes to make sure they're paying attention.
People are going
to
laugh at me and probably call me a scumbag.
Let me rephrase that question.
Captains of industry, titans of the industrial world.
Oh, you brave soul, joining us on the return trip home after surviving the Dominaria pre-release. I'm Sean Seacrest, he's Brian Tibbetts, and he's Matt Hurley. Together, we're the Tryhards. Coming up this week on Tryhards, we have a new era of promises kept. What magic did we play this week? Well, it was Dominaria pre-release weekend, so we'll talk about our initial review of the first time we had the set in our hands. We'll figure out whether or not more transparency from Wizards is going to be good and whether you'll need to change your style at tournaments after the April tournament release notes. We get it started each week with what are you drinking? Ryan, you just got back from the home wet bar. What'd you make up?
Sometimes when the wife has a bad day, I get the benefit of it because she came home and kind of had that look on her face. And we had to run the girl to soccer practice. And she said, are we out of bourbon? And I said, unfortunately, we are. And she said, I'm going to pick up some bourbon. And I said, oh, hey, while you're there, just get some tonic water, too. And she's like, done. So she came home with the tonic water. So I was like, sweet. We got some sweet St. George's gin, which a buddy of mine who professionally bartends out in California gave me as a Christmas gift. And I tell you what, it is so good. So that plus the Fever Tree tonic water, I feel like I'm living the life in the penthouse.
I've got a nice glass of bourbon, actually. I had a really long day, and I'm like, I need some bourbon. So I guess I was in Megan's shoes this week because I'm just like, some delicious, delicious bourbon. Just Woodford Reserve, so nothing too crazy.
I am joining you in name, at least, after the nice run that I had at the pre-release over the weekend and a couple of other things. I decided to go down into the basement, grab some stuff that was cellaring, and I grabbed out a 2016 Bourbon County. So that's what we're at from Goose Island. Ooh, so we're having a Bourbon County here in Command Central for the show this evening. That's what we're drinking. We hope you've got something delicious as we launch into this week's episode of Tryhards. The magic we played is going to take the place of the tournament report since there were no big tournaments this weekend being pre-release weekend. That brings us right up to our Patreon news. We want to thank you for being patient as we worked out the financial mechanism that made it possible for us to get the Tryhards playmat into your hands. Those have all been worked out now, and all you have to do is find us on PayPal, thetryhards3@gmail.com, on your PayPal app, thetryhards3@gmail.com. Select the friends and family option. It's $25 for a playmat, but your cost may not be $25. In fact, it may be less if you've been supporting the show already. As a way to say thanks to our patrons, we are going to let you deduct your level of Patreon support from the cost of your playmat. So if you've been a $10 supporter in good standing for at least 3 months, $15 and it's on its way to you. We'll even take care of the shipping for you being a fantastic supporter. You can do your own math and double check it if you need to. You can email us and we'll go ahead and get back to you. TheTryHards3@gmail.com. Select the friends and family option. If you are not a patron, well, you can still pick one up. It's going to be $30. If you're not a patron, then just put your shipping address in the comment section, and we'll send that out to you. So $25 for the mat, $5 for shipping if you're not a patron, and you can pick up one of the sweet black and white Tryhard play mats. These are a limited edition, a first-time run. If we sell out, we'll get more as soon as we can. And this is one opportunity that we're taking to say thank you to the people who have enjoyed this cast as we're coming up on 100 episodes very soon. We'll have some more merch announcements coming up in the not-too-distant future. Let's just say that. It's not right around the corner by any means, but we're not going to let this go too far before something else comes your way as well. So check it out. PayPal, thetryhards3@gmail.com. Select the friends and family option, and you can check out the sweet playmat. The pictures are up on the Patreon page. That brings us up to the raffle. We are going to give away one of these exclusive first-run Try Hard Play Mats tonight. 54 eligibles this week. Matt, we're going to have number, as I hit the randomizer, 31. Number 31.
Brian Drayling? I don't believe he's won. He's been a $10 patron for, looks like, 8 months.
Congratulations, Brian. We'll be getting a hold of you to get your contact information and get that shipped off to you. One thing that has been absolutely sweet is the feedback from our patrons on our all-too-infrequent polls that we put up. And I put one up heading into pre-release weekend. I asked the question, what are you looking most forward to playing at the Dominaria pre-release? Your options were white, Knights in Combat, blue, Wizards in Tempo, black, Demons in Death, red, Goblins in Burn, or green, Elves and Elementals. Coming in dead last with 2 votes, Goblins in Burn. Goblins still disrespected. Tied for, we'll say third, because that sounds better than next to dead last. White, Knights in Combat, and green, Elves and Elementals. Coming in second, blue, Wizards in Tempo, and the number one vote getter, black, Demons in Death. I ended up playing a lot of black over the weekend. I hope your picks ended up in your sealed pools as you got your hands on Dominaria for the first time over the weekend. Brian, I know that you were at a wedding, so you didn't have a chance to put your hands on the cardboard competitively. So, Matt, after your outing over the weekend, did you have a chance to disengage your second head? And what were your thoughts on the format?
This is probably one of the best formats, I think, limited-wise. I don't know. We're going to see standard, but limited-wise, I think this is probably one of the best formats since Innistrad. And I know that's a big, you know, leap there because Innistrad is universally loved. Wow, is this format good?
Yeah, it was a whole lot of fun to play. The things that kind of jumped out to me after playing in 2 pre-release events this Saturday was that this format seems to be about power over efficiency. The games are going to go on for quite a few turns. There is a ton of power that's consolidated at the uncommon level, and that makes even sealed decks feel very powerful. It also feels like a grindy format. And when formats get grindy, I love them because I love choosing to draw in limited, whether it's sealed or whether it's draft. And I ended up doing that quite a few times. And this really had a Heart of Magic sort of feel to it for me. It felt like older sets. There was no need for gimmicks like vehicles or transdimensional monster invasions or, you know, other things to make this feel like Magic. And it was great to sit down and have that semi-nostalgic, semi-core set feel to it, in that it was just powerful, it was resonant, and it was the gameplay that mattered the most. And that was my takeaway from getting my hands on the cards. Brian's had his hand on quite a few cards already. As you're, what, most of the way through your half a case that you ordered, have you noticed anything different about your cards? Remember, WotC came out and made a big deal about the announcement, the change in the cards, the physical cards, that they would have more of a matte printing and would have a little bit different texture to them, as well as supposedly smelling difference. Were either of you two laughed at? Because I opened my packs at pre-release, it immediately held them up to my nose and gave it the to see if Wizards was lying to us or not. And, nope. And they did smell a little bit different.
They did. I was absolutely, when I first opened them, I actually was taken aback, first of all, by the first cards I was looking at, which I think was a white card, but it looked a little smudged on the printing, kind of like how some of the Kaladesh cards or some of the Amonkhet cards ended up getting smudged, I think, in the last printing process, which didn't occur very often. It wasn't like a critique or anything. I absolutely did the same thing, Sean. I put, you know, I did the smell test, and it's absolutely different. I split a case with Mr. Nash. I'm keeping one box sealed, but I've cracked both boxes that I was planning on opening. As the cards have sat around, they smell different even today than they did yesterday. I don't know what it is. Maybe tomorrow it's going to be like strawberries or blueberries. I don't know. But it is weird. It's different. And I like the texture of the cards better. Obviously, when they're in sleeves, it's not going to matter that much. But the texture of the cards, pulling them out of the packs, I really do like the matte finish better. So kudos to Wizards for doing that little bit of quality control. Hurley, did you find yourself sniffing these and your opponent looking at you like you were, you know, a crazy old man, which you are?
Well, I was sniffing them, and but nobody looked at me weird because, you know, I was much rather smell cardboard.
Because you're all Magic players.
And yeah, I'd much rather smell cardboard than what was in that room. it had a different feel to it. It had a different smell. They almost feel thicker, almost, is the best way to describe it.
I would agree.
Yeah. And yeah. So, no, it was definitely a good feel. And I think the announcement about the quality of cards was way too late. On the flip side of that, at least they did do something about it.
I'm holding one recent card, one Dominaria card, actually a Slynn Voda, the Rising Deep, here in one hand, and from Ixalan, a Fathom Fleet Firebrand. And there is a tactile difference in these two cards. The Slynn Voda, it's a little easier to handle. It's not as slick. I also like the matte finish. And I think Wizards has realized that so much of this game is featured under the lights of a feature area, and going with the matte finish hopefully will have a better look and make things easier to read when you're under those lights rather than the glossier look as I sort of tilt these into the light. The Slynn Voda, I mean, obviously you can see the light play across its face, but it doesn't get highly reflective like the Fathom Fleet Firebrand from Ixalan. So the tactile difference in the card, to me, it wasn't something that leapt off the page at me, Brian, but it was certainly noticeable as I was unpacking my Dominaria packs for pre-release.
Noticeable when you get into it and you start kind of, the thumb kind of naturally slides across the card. I think that's where I noticed it most as I was cracking packs and kind of putting them into piles. I noticed that my thumb just wasn't sticking as much. Kind of like when you pull those foils, especially the bad foiling process and some of the box sets, the Battle Royale and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It seems that you know, the thumb just kind of kind of on like, you know, a dry windshield in the summer. And these, it's real smooth. I think it's great. The thickness, it doesn't look any thicker, but we're talking millimeters here. And, you know, I feel like a nerd just even talking about the thickness of the cardboard, because once they're in sleeves, it's really not going to matter. But I think this is a good thing. As for the timing of the kind of quality control thing, I thought it was a bit, pardon my French, masturbatory on the part of Wizards. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was this long release about how we are committed to quality. And I guess I caught myself thinking, well, duh. Yeah, I would hope so. It seemed like they're spending a lot of print page to write an article on something that we just kind of take for granted, that they're worried about the quality of the cardboard, which leads me to think like, oh, maybe they weren't in the past, and just thinking, oh, whoever gets the low print bid gets the job. I don't know. I mean, I've never seen print quality issues in the past other than, like I said, a few smeared cards here and there. Did you find that timing a little strange?
I just found it to be part of the hype machine leading up to Dominaria. That was just one more stone they wanted to put into place that says, we've improved the game again in this way this time. Yeah. I just thought it was part of that. In fact, I've got these two. Let's see if I can hold it up by the mic here. We're going to do the test. That was the Fathom Fleet Firebrand, and here goes Slynn Voda. You look at the paper layers inside, they're what you would think they would be. The Slynn Voda doesn't look like it has any extra layers, so I don't know if they're just using a slightly thicker stock for it or what. There is a little different, and the finish that they use to finish them too is going to be part of that feel. As you tear them open, there doesn't seem to be anything right away, and I don't have a jeweler's loop handy that jumps out at you. Both have the blue interior, both have the multi-layer press together, so it's obviously going to be in the finish, and hopefully this is something that that really catches on, because, Matt, they said they were just doing this with the English releases for Dominaria, right?
As far as I know, that's what they were planning on doing.
Oh, that'll be interesting if we get, you know, like a box of foreign Dominaria, if the card quality is that much different. Here, let me rip my foil Karn in half and see what it does. foil Karn sounds like the others.
The card quality with the other languages have always been much higher. I mean, like, I get German boxes and Russian boxes, and the card quality is always much higher because they have regional printers that do it, and they don't have these mass market printers. And I'm guessing the regional printers are probably more expensive.
Okay, so somebody out there in Patreon land or who listens to the cast has got to have some background in printing, because that's our audience, right? These are people who are captains of industry, titans of the industrial world. Why can't we have regional printers like Europe does, like Japan does? That seems silly. I mean, I know that there's kind of the mass market things and efficiency in the American model, etc., but can't Wizards go to someone like that? Or is it just because the absolute sheer volume that they need, we have to go to Mass Market Printers for the English editions of the card.
My pre-release for the weekend, I mentioned, played in two events. I was trying to play in all three, but alas, that didn't happen. Not because I wasn't up to the task, but because there weren't three. A small town LGS doesn't get a huge supply of what you need to run those pre-release events. Although the prize support from Wizards was great, our LGS ran through its total allotment in just two events, as we had 40-something for the first one and then high 20s for the evening one that didn't start until like 7:30 Saturday night. It is of historical record that both events were taken down by either a tryhard or a tryhard supporter. Michael Barnes, who we mentioned last week in his drive to think about opening an LGS, he's also one of our Hard of Famers. He and his crew came in and participated in the Dominaria pre-release. He actually took down the day event, and then I took down the night event. So those are our two play mats head-to-head on the Patreon page. You see the two tryhards mats. That's
pretty sweet. That's a great picture.
Yeah, that was the matchup in round two, and a whole lot of fun. What I enjoyed about the format is that it allows me to play limited Magic the way that I enjoy it most. And that's to be super greedy, to play ever. I played five color bombs in the night event and went 5-0. And there were some close matches along the way, but this format seems to be more about power, as I mentioned before, than efficiency, Matt. Were you struck the same way that this seems to be a super greedy format?
It seemed like efficiency ultimately won the day at our pre-releases, which were, again, pretty record numbers. The power was there, so you had to have power and efficiency, if that makes sense. There was a lot of really powerful cards, but you had to be able to make your drops, and the format seemed really fast where we were playing. I wouldn't say really fast, but the format seemed pretty fast to the point where you had to expect the Boros decks and the Blue-White Flyers decks that were just going to like kind of tempo you out. So I don't know. Maybe we had two different experiences. It seemed like at the top tables, you either had fairly good Boros guys, and then you had like one or two big top end beaters, or you had kind of, like I said, like a blue white tempo control ish deck where you could just punch through four damage here, and flyers were key as well. Being able evasion was key, it seemed like, as well.
Yeah, I think part of that comes from the fact that blues commons seem to be so good, and a lot of them put you in the air. So being able to deal with flyers or have some of your own seem to be key if you're going to play limited. And limited is going to be the order of the week for GPs this week. GP Columbus and GP Bologna both going to be limited with the new Dominaria set. The other tournament coming up this weekend, SCG, is going to be in Atlanta for Team Constructed after a set just came out. This is kind of breaking the format. They usually go standard for a few weeks right after a new set comes out, but maybe they were still a little hesitant after the recent standard format of late. So Team Constructed in Atlanta for SCG. Brian, you love limited. As you've kind of watched some of this set unfold now, and you've seen pictures of my pool that was the winner on Saturday night, you've seen Hurley talk about what won for him. What's your sense of this format on a scale of hyper-aggressive, as we saw in the original trip to Zendikar, where you had landfall and all these other mechanics? No limited format has ever been that aggressive since.
Right.
To the ultimate, you know, sort of slower formats of core sets, even back in the days of five-color control in limited when we were in Lorwyn block. Those were really slow limited sets.
He stole my heart. Yeah.
Are you getting some sense of fast or slow? I know you didn't get a chance to play, but you've played a ton of limited, and you've looked at a ton of cards already.
It's interesting. I was in constant contact with the Shark Tank here in Galesburg, who went down to Titan Games in Peoria. Big crew went down there, and they had 94 people show up for the pre-release down in Titan, to the point where they had to go across the parking lot into another building, into a back room at multiple tables, and they didn't get done till like 7 a.m. because of delays and people signing up late and all kinds of stuff. So just to speak to the popularity, I think, of what this set brings, I've been pretty impressed with the power level. And I think it's power over efficiency. But Hurley, I understand exactly what you're saying about you have to get on the board with something. Otherwise, you're going to get beaten down. The card that I think has really taken off that I was so impressed with was the Torgar Famine Incarnate, where you can sacrifice kind of like the little saprolings
We'll talk about that in just a few minutes, Brian.
But right. But to cast this thing on like turn four by sacking a couple of sapperlings to it, if you make your land drops and maybe have some mana acceleration, seems so silly to have a 7/6. At first I thought it had flying and I was like, get out of the city, that's nuts. And then I was like, oh well, thank God it doesn't. But no, the power level of a lot of these cards in limited at least seems really, really strong, whether you're beating down with big elves, big dragons, or big avatars like Torgar. It seems like the power level is great, and I think I'm really looking forward to doing either a sealed or a draft. Draft is going to be fun coming up this weekend to see if that holds true, but I just can't wait to get my hands on some of these cards in a competitive setting instead of just cracking packs and looking at them saying, why aren't you a deck?
There's nothing bigger to beat down with than Yargle. Matt, did you get the Yargle? I know I did, and it certainly makes its presence felt on the battlefield.
So, sadly, I did not get to Yargle, but as I mentioned, I played in two different pre-releases. The Saturday one, I had a very, very medium deck. It just wasn't there. I mean, that, you know, I was playing a blue-white flyer tempo deck, and it had 3/3 flash that all your historic creatures get flash. That card really, really impressed me. I didn't have enough removal. I had to splash black for my three removal spells I had. It was in the low end of an okay pool, and it just didn't do it. And I ended up taking my third loss in round six. So I did my normal two-headed giant. You guys have heard me talk about it with my buddy Brian, who is a kind of a super casual player, but we always play two-headed giant together. It's just kind of our thing. We open up our pools, and I have to say, Sean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I have to say this is probably one of the most difficult building experiences I've ever had with pools as far as building your actual deck. The power level is so spread out. You have to have that, the curve has to hit, but we also have powerful cards. So there's a lot of powerful cards, but they're so kind of spread out along the curve. Was that your experience as well, Sean?
My experience with it was you have to be willing to stick to your guns. If you're going to be an aggressive deck, you have to be all in aggressive and throw caution to the wind. If you're going to be a power deck, you're going to have to sort of live by the Reed Duke mantra of, I'd rather play my cards a turn late than not play them at all. You might have to give up on the curve and just play the best card that you have available on any given turn. Because if you go on the power side, you're only playing one spell per turn until the very, very late game. But one of the key mechanics, and we talked about this when the set was released, is understanding how to play your cards with kicker. If you're a deck that's trying to beat down that game or wants to be aggressive, you play it on curve. If you can affect the battlefield or go wide or whatever it is, you only hold on to it to be kicked if there's no pressure on you or if it's going to be a blowout or you've already got the game at a stall. So I think knowing when to use your cards on rate versus when to save them for kicker, I saw a lot of players who hadn't played with kicker before struggle to make that decision.
Oh, yeah. And I think, I mean, this is a tangent, but I do think kicker should be a evergreen mechanic because I do think it's a highly skill intensive ability. So we opened up our pools. We went to time and we were rushing to build our pools. We had the most meme deck in the world. I was playing a green black deck with a blue splash. My buddy Brian was playing a red white deck with a black splash. He ended up with two of the red black legends that have flash, give all your creatures haste. Tiana. Also, he had the guy who gives all of your creatures the first strike. They become double strike. And then he also had Ansira's Wings and Traxos Scourge of Krooge, which is the 7/7 for four.
That's awesome.
The first match we won. So we turn four, we play Traxos. Turn five, we play Ansira's Wings on it. 8/8 flying vigilance, lifelink, trample. So that won us the game. Second match, we won with Thorn Elemental with Ansira's Wings. Third match, we looked at the timer and the video and stuff because we could tell by the video that when they were streaming it, we won the game in less than 5 minutes of actual play. The way we did that was I turned one Land War Elf, turned two the guy who is a 3/2, 3-drop that makes a sapling when he dies, and then I turned three the big Torvod or whatever his name is that or makes your opponent's life total half of what their starting life total is. So turn three, I got a 7/6 that did 15 damage to our opponents. That didn't take long to win that game. And the funny part was that Brian and I were arguing about whether it was the right play. And of course it's the right play. I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is going to feel so bad if it just dies a removal spell. I sacrifice out my Land War Elf and I'm just short on mana. So that was where I was at, but that was super meme-y. And then we had some other rounds in there as well. We won, but we ended up just splitting at the top table, and we probably should not have won, but you know what? Screw it. It was a ton of fun. So we split first. We each got 3/4 of a box for our two-headed giant.
That is a fun way to spend the day. It sounds to me like the real MVP there was on Sarah's wings, not anything
else.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, gosh. That part.
I'm reminded of a Bette Midler song, guys. Come on. A
first pickable in draft every single time.
We'll see if Matt's prediction plays true when the drafts start firing up this weekend. Traxos with On Sarah's Wings. I'm glad I didn't have to sit across the table from that. Brings us up to this week's news. We hope your pre-release was an awesome time for you and yours. Guys, real quickly, Arena Beta is going to undergo a big update on the 26th. So that's coming up this week. It's going to bring Dominaria and events to the beta for the first time. They're also going to tweak the economy a little bit, too, as they continue to pursue how to make that just right before releasing it to the public. Tim O'Hara introduced himself on the mothership to the community writ large. He wrote an article entitled Commitment to Excellence this past week. Essentially, it summed up the fact that there's going to be more transparency coming from Wizards, mostly about the way they physically make the game. Tom Wanderstrand is going to introduce himself from Wizards with a weekly article on the mothership entitled How We Make It, and it's going to go into the details of the physical game. We were talking about the cards a moment ago, the different tactile feel, the different scent when you open the pack. Matt, is this attempt at transparency from Wizards going to be taken for face value?
I want to see kind of how, you know, they've made a lot of announcements like this before, and I just want to see how everything's going to play out, so I'm definitely holding how I feel about this. Transparency is always good. I mean, that's just what it comes down to. And, you know, we talked about the card quality earlier and how they made the announcement. And I think it was just kind of like too little too late because there was a lot of complaints about 25th edition card quality, which is hot garbage. I don't think they've solved it yet, but they should have came out and they said, we've heard your complaints. We're working on fixing it. It is what it is. But I want to see kind of how they utilize this new gentleman to communicate with the community as a whole.
Brian, you're a busy guy, kids to raise, classes to teach, papers to put off grading while you drink gin and tonics. Are you going to have time to even spend time perusing an article about how the game gets physically made? Or is this something that Wizards is just doing to kind of pat themselves on the back?
I know I sounded like the grumpy old man sitting on the front porch telling kids to get off my lawn earlier, but I actually kind of am interested in that. If it's like a monthly update and things, and it starts to get a little too far down the rabbit hole with printing processes, and this is how they get trucked across I-95, whatever, here or there. No, you're going to lose me. Absolutely. But a simple breakdown of here's what we do, here's what we're constantly looking out for, and we have these things in mind when we do them. I like those kinds of articles. I kind of like to see how the sausage is made, so to speak. But you can't get too detailed. I don't need to know all the intricacies to know how my favorite board game, such as Forbidden Island, was made. I don't need to know that. I just know it's a great game. And the people who did it have gotten their kudos and their awards and kind of went through their creative process. Same with Wizards. They do such magical stuff up in Renton, for the most part, that I'm thrilled with that. And I love watching things like the video that Noah Bradley, who's a fantastic MTG artist, has done on his own website that kind of shows, here's what happens when Wizards calls me and says, I want you to do some cards, and here's my process. It's like a 10 or 15 minute video, and I urge anybody to check it on out because it's great. And he kind of fast forwards through some of the slower parts and kind of says, here's what happens, and here's how I push back to Wizards, and here's when they push back at me, and eventually we come up with something great. So as long as it doesn't go too far down the rabbit hole, yeah, I'll read it.
Well, we'll see how this is received by the community. Look for it. It's not going to be under Tim O'Hara anymore. It's going to be Tom Wanderstrand writing the article. The other thing on the plate this week, the April tournament release notes. Brian, it is now incumbent upon both you and your opponent to update the status changes of a game. According to new section 4.1 in player communication, both players are responsible for the status of the game. Status includes life totals, energy, poison counters, who's the monarch, whether or not you have the sitting's blessing, and a litany of other things that you have to keep track of in a game of Magic. Do you like this formalization of the requirement to maintain status and it being put on both players? I think this is a great step forward in the tournament community.
I absolutely agree with you 100%. I can't stand when you're playing and I'm kind of in the tank trying to make a decision, and I glance up and my opponent is like checking their Facebook page or something, or just kind of checked out of the game. And I kind of want to be like, you're at 12 life, right, bro? And it's like, kind of does the, you know, the trick I do on my students sometimes to make sure they're paying attention. It's just going to require a modicum of civility. And please have your head in the game when you're playing. If, you know, your life point is off, hey, let's figure it out. Let's go back and say that. Sean, you and I, when we Skype and just, you know, we're deck testing, we do that all the time. Like, oh, yeah, I had you fetch here and I had this. And yep, it was here. That's the kind of stuff that should happen at every Magic game. And people should do it more often just to double check and triple check. I don't think that's ever going to be something that gets annoying. Just the status of the game. When you double check life totals, you double check energy. If you're the monarch, you're playing the wrong format. But hey, who am I to judge?
Brian, hey, you could be playing Legacy.
Yeah, and Brian, that's true. I mean, some of those cards are starting to drop, especially
into death and taxes.
So I have seen people declare themselves the monarch, and oh man, watching them draw an extra card per turn is just painful. Quick sidebar, Brian, you mentioned that you essentially are doing the check to see if someone's paying attention. I will occasionally, and I don't know if this is scumbaggy or not. I don't mean it to be that way, but sometimes I can't help myself. I will do what I call the idiot check. And that is to say something that I know is outside the rule of the game just to get their opinion on it. And I'm not going to play the game that way. If they disagree, we'll call the judge or I'll correct myself. I have no intention of continuing the play into an illegal state, but I will say something or present information in a way. I'm going to say it flat out. I'm idiot checking my opponent. To kind of get a handle on what they scumbaggy or trying to find out how informed your opponent is, because it's not something that I look forward to doing. But sometimes that kind of competitive side of me takes over and goes, OK, I don't know if this opponent really knows what's going on. We're going to run a little check here.
No, I do it all the time. And I think it's from my background as a teacher. I do it to my students all the time where I'll be like, so that means that this happens this way, right? And they'll look at me kind of sideways and be like, well, no, it's completely the opposite. Mm-hmm. I'm like, exactly. You're exactly right. And I think that's important because you never want to assume that everybody knows what's happening. And I always tell my students, hey, always be critical. Always be thinking. Don't just accept what someone is feeding you as, you know, face value, that that's the right way to do it. And you have to do that with your opponent, especially if you get the feeling that they're just kind of checking out in between turns or on your turn or whatever. It's rare that it happens. Honestly, I think most people are like me. When we play a game of Magic, we're just excited to play a game of Magic, and we're kind of focused on doing that. But, you know, things happen. I've had people take calls in the middle of games and matches and then come back and be like, wait, where was the board state? And at that point, it's kind of like I'm just being like, oh, you lost, didn't you know? You know, and whatever. Obviously, it's not true. But I just want to double check that. And I think that's an important thing to do to make sure that you're giving the attention that's deserved of the game and of your opponent. That's the last thing I would ever want to be accused of, is not paying attention to a game of Magic and having somebody idiot check me. I think that would be like the worst insult I could possibly have.
I can just see Brian when he's at F&M. Important call comes in from an opponent and he just slowly pushes their stuff onto the floor while they're gone. And oh, didn't you see what happened?
See,
your stuff jumped off the table onto the floor. I could see that.
People are going to laugh at me and probably call me a scumbag, but I do the opposite. I am somebody, and it drives people that know me very, very well insane, that I can literally be doing three or four things. Somebody can be talking to me and they're like, are you even listening? I can recite the last 15 things they told me. If I'm playing an opponent who doesn't know me, sometimes I will check out. I've done many times they've played because they're like, oh, this guy doesn't know what the hell's going on. And I could tell you exactly what the board state is and stuff like that. And it's just a subconscious thing I do sometimes where I'm just kind of like, my ADD kicks in. I'm like looking around, and or somebody will walk by like, hey, what's going on? And, you know, they'll be like, attacking and I don't even look at the board. I'm like, block, block, block here. So, yeah, maybe that's scummy. I don't know.
You know, people have different levels of engagement in the game. And like you said, I totally understand the ADHD angle where people are just kind of like, it seems like I'm not participating, but I'm participating. That's easy for me to pick up on. As long as they're into the game when it matters, why not? You know, yeah. It's not like, hey, attack with all these. And they're like, hold on, I need to take this. It's like, no, you're doing this right now.
I think we just discovered Matt's superhero power right here on the cast this evening.
Annoying the crap out of my girlfriend. Yep.
You know, that's one of them. And I don't know if we're going to list that under pro or con. Matt, you were the first one to point out to me the new Section 3.4 rule in the April tournament release notes. Foil-only printed cards can now be issued a proxy by a judge in a tournament setting if it would prevent marked cards. Now, we're going to break that down really quickly. What that is driving to say in its legalese is that Magic cards that their only printing is in foil and the judge would think that it would be a marked card, they are now allowed to give you a proxy so that you don't have marked cards in your deck. Is this really something to get worked up about, or is this just going to be a feel bad if somebody puts together a deck they think is sweet and has one foil in it because that's the only one they can get, and then a judge makes them use a proxy?
So you might as well call this the Kess Dissident Mage rule. That was the card that is being used in Legacy in Grixis Delver, and it was only printed in Commander 2017, and the warping on those foils is awful to the point where it was clearly a marked card. I mean, it would lift up. If it was in the top 8 cards of your deck, it would physically create a gap within your deck. At one of the GPs a few weeks ago, the head judges issued out proxies to say, hey, these are too marked. So this is just them kind of doing a patching up and doing their own damage control, because there's no other printing other than that foil. There's a few other cards in the game that only have foil printings. The little goblin, the black red goblin, is one of them, I believe. And there's a few of those, and that's seen some fringe play. So this makes it real easy. And it, you know, if they ever release like a From the Vault that has a unique card in it or something like that that sees tournament play, I hope they never do that. Or you get like those planeswalkers from the deck that are only in those planeswalker decks, and somebody figures out how to use it in a format. Those are only available in foil, so now they have a patch to fix that.
There may need to be a patch for Section 8.2. If the tryhards show up as a team at a tournament again, which tryhard is most likely to get the team DQ'd? You don't have to raise your hand. Just keep your answer to yourself. Matt would be the correct answer. If you had Matt, yes, you can go ahead and win this portion of the podcast. According to Section 8.2 now, in team tournaments, if one player on a team is DQ'd, the entire team is now DQ'd. The only exception for this is at the WMCQ, and Wizards is saying that's because those players haven't chosen to play together. They simply qualified to play for their country. So if there is a player DQ'd at the WMCQ, that will not result in the entire team being disqualified. I think this is a great rule. I think it means that teams are going to police themselves to keep things from escalating. And if you choose to show up with someone at an event as part of your team, you are definitely responsible for that person's behavior and approach to the game throughout that event. So I like that move. It's always great to be on a team that has a financial mind about what's going on in this collectible card game, one that just celebrated its 25th year anniversary. With that in mind, Matt's got something special in the elevator. The latest printing of something from days of yore.
Mox Amber. This card is way too expensive, and I'm not sure it's going to have any effect on Standard whatsoever. So this is my sell these, because I think these are going to see some Eternal play, but when they do, they're going to be $25 cards. I have a flip side of this as well, and that flip side is if foils drop down to between $30 and $40, trade for every single one you can. So sell your normal Mox Ambers right now. It's pre-release hype.
Mox Amber, this week's In the Elevator. Matt, I want to ask you about something before we get to 3 minutes to brew. Dominaria is the celebration of the 25th anniversary of Magic, for all intents and purposes. Where's the overall finance picture at 25 years into the granddaddy of collectible card games?
So a few weeks ago, I talked about how I felt like, and this was just before the spoilers for Dominaria, I talked about how I kind of felt the finance portion was a little slow. With the release of Dominaria, this is revitalizing the community. People are coming out. I mean, we had record numbers at our pre-release. People are coming out and basically just saying, oh my gosh, I haven't played in 10 years. I remember this card. I remember this card. Look at this saga. This is sweet. This is dragging a lot of people out. We had a huge jump on masterpieces and some of the full art lands, the expeditions. I just think that everything that's in Dominaria is just going to kill it. I think it's going to kill it. I think it's going to revitalize the community. And I think that between Popper or the team Pro Tour that's coming up, all this various stuff, I think the financial market right now is, it's key to buy in. And I think that reserveless duels and some other cards, specifically legacy ones, are ready to pop, as far as I think that we're going to see $500 underground seas within the next 3 months or so. I think this is the key time. I think people are excited, and I think this is what Magic needed to kind of continue on the track and be successful, and I'm glad that everything is happening the way it is.
We'll see if that continues to bear out as this set unfolds. Dominaria hasn't even gotten to release weekend yet, and it's being credited with so much in the community. That brings us up to this week's 3 Minutes to Brew. What do you got for us hanging out of your back pocket there?
Well, as I reflect upon Ice-T and his influence on our pop culture in America from the mid-80s forward, all I can think about is colors. It struck me, we've been doing 3 Minutes to Brew. I've picked some Dominaria cards that I think are going to have some impact on Standard, probably on Modern, maybe not so much on Vintage and Legacy. But it kind of got me to thinking about all of these different legends and different things. And it was really about, if I was to really put a deck together that was focused on a certain color or color combination, what would it be? Dominaria has given us so many good options. That's my question tonight, is which color or combination of colors are you most excited to brew with the release of Dominaria? Hurley, let me start with you. What's got your rainbow flavor going?
Brewing-wise and Modern, I've been playing kind of on the side. I've been playing that Value Town black-white deck. That deck is a ton of fun. And I'm super excited to brew with bug colors. And the card I want to play, the giant moss monster that you can play a card from your graveyard, or one type of each card from your graveyard every turn. I'm super excited to brew with that bug deck with Heartless Summoning and cards like that. Within Standard, I want to play a blue-white control deck. The reason I want to play a blue-white control deck is the 3/3 for 4 flying flash that's blue and white that all your historic spells have flash. I want to mix in black, obviously, but being able to flash in end of turn that black saga that essentially damnations the board, puts a counter on it as soon as it comes into play, and then at your draw steps, it damnations the board. I think that's going to be super cool. And maybe it's too cute, but I want to play a control deck.
Well, there's nothing that jumps out of the set that makes me want to change up my brew and Reanimator. So Standard is where my mind's mostly been running. I'm going to agree with Matt. White-blue seems very powerful. And if you look further to the other sets that will be legal, I think green-black is also going to be a very powerful color combination. But if I'm going to be in white-blue, I'm going to be looking heavily toward control. You've got a lot of low-drop white impactors as far as removal. You've got Baffling End. You've got the new one that comes in and exiles any target tapped creature. And they're going to have to really be aware during the attack step on the other side of the board between that and Settle the Wreckage, because it's an answer that they're going to have something to play mid-combat, which if Settle the Wreckage becomes the removal du jour and blue-white playing inside the combat step becomes the go-to defense, then Admiral's Order becomes a staple in Standard in order to respond to that with a hard counterspell for a blue. I also want to play Esper. I just think that Matt had the wrong saga. I want to flash in Eldest Reborn. Get that going with Wrath Capuchin. The ability to play Yawgmoth Vile Offering, especially with Capuchin out at instant speed, is just a beating. And that's what I'm looking at. The spine of a white-blue control deck with a splash for just a couple of black cards along the way. That's what has me interested in where we're going in standard. And yeah, I think Karn plays a big part of that.
Sean, let me ask you this. Do you think the ability to flash in planeswalkers at the end of turn, let's say you're holding a counter spell up or whatever, your opponent doesn't do much or you don't need to use a removal spell, do you think the ability to flash that in at end of turn, have mana open that next turn to protect that planeswalker or saga, do you think that's worth playing a 3-3 flyer for 4?
Let me rephrase that question. In this current standard, would you be willing to pay 4 in order to become a deck that is essentially a fairies deck?
Absolutely.
Because that's what Raf Kapushin does. Once you have him in play and you untap with him, you now get to play fairies and your opponent still has to play at sorcery speed. So I think
I think it's amazing.
Yeah, I do too. This standard format, I don't think is going to have you dead on turn 3. And the fact that white has the low drops as well as the full board answer, they're not going to know on turn 4 when you're holding up 4 mana whether you are planning on flashing in Raf, whether you're planning to settle the wreckage, or whether you're just planning to draw 2 cards at instant speed at the end of the turn. So you've got so many options open to you that impact the game in such different ways. I think your opponent is going to have to either, one, go for broke and walk face first into that door being slammed in their face if they're wrong, or two, give you that latitude that ultimately opens up more play space later in the game.
I would agree with both of you guys on this. This is Raf Kapushin is the card that I'm really excited about to maybe take forward and to make a white-blue control deck, because if you think about all the cards that have been impactful in the decks that I have liked to play over the last 6-9 months, the one that comes to mind the most is Torrential Gearhulk. Well, think about all the different kinds of cards that you can flash in, including Planeswalkers now that they changed the Legends rule. That seems amazing, if nothing else. And it's just fitting, Sean, that as we return to Dominaria, aka the roots of the game, we're returning to the roots of when we started to become real players of Magic and thinking about, are we aggro players? No, we're control players. And that's what has me really, really excited. If I had to pick a secondary 2 colors, I would say that my favorite color combination to play is it? And the blue-red wizard idea, Cinderwind, that card to me in a wizard's build, I think is going to be so great with Adelise the Cinderwind. I hope somebody breaks that. I'm going to do my best to be the first one to come up with a deck that makes wizards really, really cheap and, you know, makes them very, very large. I don't think it's going to be a thing, but it'll be fun nonetheless.
3 minutes to brew this week here on Tryhards. And Brian, I don't think you're going to have to work very hard. I saw the Cinderwind wrecking people in Limited over the weekend. That card is an absolute beating. Cinderwind may be one of the cards that's actually better in Modern with the higher concentration of wizards to where you can actually play it as an aggro deck.
Well, people always, you know, play Snapcaster Mage as kind of a, you know, kind of a slow finisher in some of those control decks. Well, if you're getting 1/1 counters on your Snapcaster Mage, that can be a real fast clock if you can flash that in at the end of turn. So yeah, I'm really excited to see what somebody's going to do in Modern with that card.
That's what Wizards needed. Wizards needed a tribal monastery mentor. That's what Cinderwind is for Wizards.
Yeah,
Oh my God. That we just broke it right here on Tryhards. It's over. Consigned to the dustbin, Modern broken. Mark it down. An uncommon from Dominaria just broke Modern. We hope that you're ready to brew because Dominaria is going to be sweet. And with the power level, I think it's going to step to the forefront after rotation and probably take the mantle of the defining cards in the format from Ixalan. Ixalan will still be felt, but I think Dominaria probably going to be the foot forward after rotation coming up in the fall. Guys, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week? For me, playing Limited over the weekend with the pre-release, it was understanding the nature of the format. After a couple of rounds, realizing that this was a power over efficiency format, at least my experience with it was, and then being able to play to that was my awakening moment. Matt, what'd you do to get better?
You know, I've been in a rut the last few weeks. Just didn't want to play Standard, wasn't super excited about Limited. And you know what I did to get better? I played some Magic and I won. It felt great. And I want to play a whole crap ton of Dominaria now and draft it just all day, every day. So that's what I did to get better in Magic.
contrary to popular belief, I did actually get to play some Magic this weekend. There's been a family friend down the block whose eldest son has been interested in Magic, has been to a few F&Ms, has been very, very personable down at the shop, has been kind of availing himself very, very well of the community, and has been, you know, kind of accorded all the rights that a new player should get. So he's been wanting to play Magic with me for quite a long time, and we just haven't been able to make it work. So Sunday, he actually came over, and we sat down and played, and I was kind of like, I don't have any idea what kind of deck you have. So I have a deck, you have a deck, let's just play. And I didn't pull out, like, some legacy deck, but I had my standard deck, but it was obviously overpowered against him. I just said, okay, what other decks do you have? And he's put together a couple of really cool decks just kind of with the cards that he's had. And it's just complete kitchen table Magic. And it was so much fun sitting down and just seeing cards like Blightning out of a Dragons deck that he put together. I was just like, oh, my God, this is so cool. I get to cast Blightning against you. He's like, ah, oh, I knew that card was good. I said, yeah, how does it feel to be on the other end of it? And he's like, oh, this is terrible. I won a game with one of his decks, and then he beat me down with his Hapatra Vizier of Poisons deck, which was so much fun for him to kind of win. And then we did some trading at the end. I gave him a playmat. I gave him deck boxes. I gave him sleeves. I gave him like $60 worth of cards. And he's like, oh, do you have anything in my trade binder that you want? And I was like, this is a really cool foil Fatal Push, but that's like a $10 card, dude. And he's like, oh, no, you should have that. And I said, well, if you're going to give that to me, now I'm going to go down and give you like another $20 worth of cards because I just kind of feel bad for taking that. But anyway, he walked out of this house with like $100 plus worth of cards because I'm like, go through these rares and anything you see in here, just take. And he's like, that's fantastic. He was as high as a kite. So I felt amazing being the ambassador to my Magic community on Sunday, and that was a great feeling.
What'd you do to get better at the game? Ask yourself that question every now and again, and we'll see you back here next week for another episode of Try Hards. Oh, you brave souls.